In one of my courses at Bob Jones University, we studied heroes of the faith, not out of Hebrews 11, but historical Christian leaders, movers and shakers like John Calvin and John Knox and John Wesley, Charles Spurgeon. And one such in-depth study was on Martin Luther. Martin Luther prayed audacious prayers. When Martin Luther's co-worker became ill, the reformer prayed boldly for healing. "I besought the Almighty with great vigor," he wrote. "I attacked him with his own weapons," quoting from Scripture all of the promises I could remember that prayers should be granted and that he must grant my prayers if I was to henceforth put faith in his promises. On another occasion, his good friend Frederick Myconius was sick, and Luther wrote to him, "I command thee in the name of God that to live, because I have need of you in the work of reforming the church. The Lord will never let me hear that thou art dead, but will permit thee to survive me. For this I am praying, and it is my will, and may my will be done, because I seek only to glorify the name of God." As John Wesley was crossing the Atlantic Ocean, contrary winds came up, and he was reading in his cabin when he became aware of some confusion on board. And when he learned that the winds were knocking the ship off course, he responded in prayer. And Adam Clark, who was a colleague of his, heard the prayer and recorded it. "Almighty and everlasting God, thou hast sway everywhere. All things serve the purpose of thy will. Thou holdest the winds in thy fists and sittest upon the water floods and reignest a king forever. Command these winds and these waves that they obey thee and take us speedily, safely to the haven whither we would go." And Wesley stood up from his knees, took up his book, and continued to read. And Dr. Clark went on deck, where he found the winds were calming the ship back on course. But Wesley made no remark about the answered prayer. Clark wrote, "So fully did he expect to be heard that he took it for granted that he was heard." How bold are your prayers? Boldness is in prayer is sometimes sort of an uncomfortable thought for many. We think of speaking softly to God, humbling ourselves before God, having a conversation with God. But agonizing before God, storming heaven with prayers, pounding on the door of the Most High, is such prayer irreverent, presumptuous? It would be had not God invited us to pray that way. Hebrews 4:16, "So let us come boldly to the throne of God and stay there to receive his mercy, to find grace to help us in our times of need." Joshua did this, but not before he didn't. His prayer life teaches us what happens when we don't pray, as much as it teaches us how to pray. In the days following the Shechem gathering that we talked about last week, a group of strangers entered Joshua's camp, and they told him, "From a very far country your servants have come," Joshua 9:9. They presented themselves as hapless pilgrims from a distant place, and everything seemed to fit. Their grain sacks and their sandals and clothes were worn out. Even their bread was moldy and dry. They claimed to be allies of the Hebrews, and they praised the accomplishments of God and asked Joshua and his men to make a covenant with them. And Joshua weighed all the options, and his rulers eventually agreed. 3 days passed before Joshua realized he had been snookered. These people were not from a distant land. They were from Gibeon, only a day's walk away. Their weathered clothing was just a disguise. They pretended to be foreigners because they knew that the Hebrews had attacked Jericho and Ai, and they may have known God's laws had made special provision for cities outside of Canaan. Any city that agreed to make peace would be spared. So they were afraid, and they resorted to deception. So why didn't Joshua and the elders catch on to this ruse? The answer is in Joshua chapter 9, verse 14. They did not ask counsel of the Lord. The practice of the Hebrews was supposed to be pray first and then act. Joshua was told to stand before Eleazar the priest, who shall inquire before the Lord. And Joshua failed to do this. He and his council entered into an alliance with the enemy because they didn't seek the counsel of God. We can do well to learn from Joshua's mistake. Our enemy enters our camp in disguise as well. 2 Corinthians 11:14, Satan himself masquerades as an angel of light. He's crafty. That's why it's essential that we consult God in everything. Always, immediately, quickly. Live with one ear toward heaven and keep the line open to God. Is this opportunity from you, God? Are you in this venture, God? Should I take this road, God? At every decision, at every crossroads, acknowledge him, heed him, ask him, do I turn right or left? My life verses are Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart. Lean not unto thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. Our relationship with God is exactly that, a relationship. His invitation is clear and simple. Psalm 27, 8, come and talk with me, O my people. And our response, Lord, I am coming. We abide in him. He abides with us. He grants wisdom as we need it. He keeps us in this battle for our mind. He provides clarity to distinguish the voice of a stranger. He will help us against the devil. He'll disclose the craftiness of Satan. But we must regularly consult him, because in everything, his word is a lamp unto our feet, not a spotlight on the future. He gives us enough light to see the next step. Max Lucado points out that glory days are such because we learn to hear God's voice telling us to turn this way or that way. Isaiah 30:21, your own ears will hear him. Right behind you, a voice will say, this is the way you should go, whether to the right or to the left. Refer every decision to the tribunal of heaven. Like David, you can ask God to bend low and hear my whispered plea. Wait until God speaks before you act, and be patient. Tough to do. Monitor your impulse. Psalm 32:8, I will instruct you and teach you in the way you should go. I will guide you with my eye. So if you feel a check in your heart, heed it and ask God again. That's the only way to outwit the devil's deceit. Consult God in everything. And call on God for great things. Joshua did. The alliance with the Gibeonites proved quickly to be troublesome. The other kings of Canaan saw them as traitors. Joshua 10, verse 5. So these five Amorite kings combined their armies in a united attack. They moved all their troops into place and attacked Gibeon. And the men of Gibeon quickly sent messengers to Joshua at his camp in Gilgal. Don't abandon your servants now. Come at once, save us, help us. For all the Amorite kings who live in the hill country have joined forces to attack us. The Gibeonites were outnumbered. But since they had an alliance with Joshua, they asked the Hebrews to help. And because he had given his word, Joshua had no choice but to come to their rescue. Warren Wiersbe, God in heaven must have laughed, because unknown to these Israelites, he was using these events to accomplish his own purposes. And instead of having to defeat these five city-states one by one, he would help Joshua conquer them all at one time. Just as God used the defeat at Ai to form a battle plan for victory over Ai, he also used Joshua's mistake to with the Gibeonites to protect Gibeon and to accelerate the conquest of Canaan. God can and does redeem our mistakes for his glory, for his purpose. And hasn't God done this in your life and in the life of others you love? Make your mistakes work for you. Joshua 10, verse 7, so Joshua and his entire army, including his best warriors, left Gilgal and set out for Gibeon. Do not be afraid of them, the Lord had said to Joshua, for I have given you victory over them. Not a single one of them will be able to stand up against you. So Joshua traveled all night from Gilgal and took the Amorites' armies by surprise. The five kings, and they never stood a chance. Apparently, they didn't expect Joshua to respond with such fervor. They turned with the Hebrews hot on their heels. As Joshua's army thundered behind them, the clouds began to thunder above them. Large hailstones fell from the sky as a divine carpet bombing. The hail killed more of the enemy than the Israelites killed with the sword. Joshua, he saw the hailstones falling and anticipated the sun setting soon, and it was midday. But we need more time, he realized. Nightfall would give the chance for the enemies to regroup. And if he had just a few more hours of daylight, he could win the battle and strike a decisive blow. So he began to pray. He had failed to pray about the Gibeonites. He didn't make the same mistake twice. Verse 12. On that day, the Lord gave the Israelites victory over the Amorites. Joshua prayed to the Lord in front of all the people in Israel. He said, stop, sun, over Gibeon. Halt, moon, over Ajalon Valley. And sun stopped. Moon stood stock still until he defeated his enemies. You can find this written in the book of Jashar. The sun stopped in its track in mid-sky, just sat there all day. There's never been a day like that before or since. God took orders from a human voice. Truly, God fought for Israel. And then Joshua returned all Israel with him to the camp at Gilgal. This was a stunning and an unprecedented prayer. The narrator knew his readers would be shocked at the story, so he referred them to the book of Jashar, which was an extra-biblical volume that contained stories about the Hebrew people. He was saying, in effect, if you find this hard to believe, check it out in the book of Jashar. The verse that deserves your highlighter is rendered in the message is 14. God took orders from a human voice. God, in his providence, pressed the solar pause button. He chose to hear and to heed Joshua's request from Vine's Expository Bible. Did the sun stand still? This is one of those places in the Bible where skeptics like to point and say, you can't take the Bible seriously because you know the sun can't stand still. How do we respond? So let's consider this miracle. We know and agree that the purpose of the Bible is to tell God's message of salvation. But just because the Bible is not a scientific book doesn't mean that it cannot be trusted scientifically. First, we know a day is determined by the earth revolving, not the sun moving around the earth, yet we use the language of observation. Whenever weather forecasters say the time of the sun's rising or setting, we understand they're using the language of observation, not scientific terminology. At the same time the sun does move, we know that everything in this universe is in motion. This account uses precise time. For instance, Joshua 10:13 says, the sun stood still in the midst of heaven. The Hebrew word translated midst, is a specific word describing the sun at its zenith, or the equivalent of the term high noon. God was very exact when this miracle recorded. And when critics say that the sun or moon to stop like that is against the laws of nature, they're forgetting that what we call laws of nature are actually laws of God, which govern nature. So if God is the author of the laws that run this universe, he not only had enough intelligence to devise these laws, he had enough power to enforce or alter those laws. From the Jesus Bible, God's continued control over creation was demonstrated by his ability to make the sun stand still. Not only can God overcome darkness in his created order, but he also has the power to banish the darkness of sin from the human heart. God overcame human blindness and grants his children the ability to see the light of his glory, seen most clearly in the person of Jesus. 2 Corinthians 4:4, Satan, who is the god of this world, has blinded the minds of those who don't believe. They're unable to see the glorious light of God's good news. Those who see Jesus and respond in faith are transformed to reflect his image before the world. Ephesians 1:18, I pray that your hearts will be flooded with light so that you can understand the confident hope he has given to those he called, the rich and glorious inheritance he has given to his people. The Encouraging Word Bible shares also about this incident. God didn't promise the Israelites with land without giving them the strength to conquer it. God helped Joshua lead the people to possession in their land. And God does not give us commands or lead us to decisions and leave us to fight the obstacles in our own strength. He strengthens us. He guides us in every detail. He seeks a close relationship with each one of us. He desires our prayers, even audacious prayers. As Joshua prayed, God heard his plea. God answered. Might he do something similar for us? Greg Pruitt believes that God will. Greg is trained as an engineer, a linguist, a Bible translator. But his most significant contribution might be in the area of extreme prayer. In his book by that name, he relates how he returned from Guinea, West Africa, to assume the role as president of the Pioneer Bible Translators. It was 2008. The Great Recession was sucking dollars out of the economy, confidence out of the public. The ministry's financial chart indicated a free fall toward insolvency. And Greg had no experience in handling such an organization. He had no tangible place to cut expenses, and resources were few. Donors were disappearing. And Greg knew of only one response, prayer. Quote, "That's when I began to learn not to pray about strategies, but to make prayer the strategy." In July, he wrote a half-page letter to his teammates worldwide, calling them to pray. He urged them to stand before God's throne and make bold, specific requests. They did. And Greg described the result. "When I saw the end of the year report, I knew God had heard our prayers. My eyes welled up with tears. If a financial expert were to analyze the graph, he'd put his finger on the month of July and say, 'What did you do right here? Whatever it was, you need to do more of it.' I searched in vain for a tangible explanation. I wanted to find trends to explain how it worked so we would do it again. But I never could. I just know God provided. All I had was God and prayer. And that's enough. Maybe God and prayer are all you have too. And like Joshua, you may be facing five kings that are bearing down on you. Discouragement, deception, defeat, destruction, death. They roar into your world like a Hell's Angels motorcycle gang, and the goal is to chase you back into the wilderness. Don't give an inch. Respond in prayer. Honest, continual, fervent prayer. You are a member of God's family. You come to God not as a stranger, but as an heir, a joint heir with Christ. His royal blood flows through your veins. Confidently you can approach his throne. Earnestly you can make your request known to him, and not because of what you have achieved, but because of what Christ has done. Jesus spilled his blood for you. You certainly can spill out your heart before God. Jesus said, if you have faith enough, you can tell the mountain to go and jump into the sea. Mark 11:23. But what is your mountain? What is the challenge in your life? Call out to God for help. Will he do for you what you want? I cannot say, but this I can. He will do what is best. We came to Alaska in 2010. And about that same time, Max Lucado was leading a group of 500 people to Israel. And one morning he held a Bible study on the Temple Mount. Sitting on the southern steps, it's a precious ascent that remains much the same as it was 2,000 years ago when Jesus and his disciples gathered right there. And Max relates this story. Our group sat with the eastern sun on their left shoulders, the temple wall to their backs. Behind them was the Dome of the Rock, which was the third most holiest site in the Muslim faith. And for my lesson, I chose a phrase out of John 3:16, one and only. Since we were sitting where Jesus stood, it seemed only right to consider Jesus' claim as the one and only Son of God. The fact that we sat in the shadow of a mosque dedicated to Muhammad only elevated the contrast. And a few minutes into the message, a strange, mysterious voice began to mock my words. It was high-pitched and eerie. And each time I said one and only, it mimicked one and only. And when I said the name Jesus, the voice, heavy with accent, scoffed, Jesus. The interpretations had all the earmarks of spiritual conflict. Christ being proclaimed, Christ being mocked, Christ's authority declared, and Jesus' authority belittled. I could tell that the voice was coming from behind the people. I searched the walls but saw nothing, and the people began to turn and try to look for the origin of the voice, as did the guides and guards, and no one could isolate it. And the more I preached, the louder the voice parroted. For fear of conceding defeat to this odd force, I didn't stop. The second point of the message was Jesus, the one and only ruler. I seized the opportunity, and rather than teach the point, I prayed and proclaimed it. Jesus is the supreme authority of this place, any place, every place, which, by the way, includes any demons, servants of hell, Satan himself. You are not welcomed in this gathering. I repeated the declaration, and the crowd began to applaud and shout, Amen. And the dissenting voice was suddenly silent, as if a switch had been flipped. It stopped. So we were able to complete our Bible study in peace. And I later asked a tour guide if the culprit had been found. We tried, he told me, but we couldn't find anything. The guide had no explanation. I do. A person might chalk up the silence of the scoffer to coincidence. I don't. I see it as providence. When the authority of Christ is proclaimed, the work of Satan must stop. Any demonic tongue must mute itself in the presence of truth. Call on God. Declare the name of Jesus. Claim his presence. Claim his promises. Matthew 7:7, ask and it will be given to you. Matthew 21:22, if you believe, you will get anything you ask for in prayer. Yes, it's a battle, but you don't fight in vain. 1 John 4:4, but you belong to God, my dear children. You have already won the victory because the Spirit who lives in you is greater than the Spirit who lives in the world. Consult God in all things. Consult God for great things. Call on him. And bring a little extra sunscreen, because the day of victory will last long into the night. Selah.